The threat of climate change presents the most serious danger yet to arise in the long age of fossil fuels. But global warming's victims, future generations, do not vote. Durable political majorities in advanced democracies have often been willing to impose economic costs on themselves to address current pollution that endangers living generations, smog, acid rain, poisoned water, and toxic runoff from manufacturing. Persuading those same voters to impose costs now to protect their grandchildren from climate risks that can be described only in outline has proved much more difficult. The British economist Nicholas Stern credibly forecasted that reducing carbon dioxide emissions enough to avert potentially catastrophic global warming would cost 1 to 2% of global gross domestic product now, while failing to act may eventually cost 5 to 20 times that amount. That seemed a more politically plausible trade-off in the global economic boom year of 2006, when Stern announced his findings, than it did in 2011, in the maw of stock market panics, European sovereign debt crises, flat growth across many industrialized democracy, and rising income inequality. Britain and continental European democracies have already taxed themselves to ease the climate risk faced by future generations. Coal-dependent Australia, after long resistance, has adopted a carbon price. In the United States, most of the major oil corporations that had earlier undermined the findings of climate science, including ExxonMobil, now accept, if reluctantly, that a price on carbon is coming, and that it might be justified. The near bipartisan deal on climate policy in Congress during 2009 suggests that America will likely enact some carbon price, but only a relatively modest one, and only after the American economy recovers from recession and stagnation, which may take 5 or more years. In Washington, higher taxes on carbon-based fuels will inevitably come later than they might have due to the resistance campaigns funded by oil and coal corporations, particularly ExxonMobil's uniquely aggressive influence campaign to undermine legitimate climate science during the late Clinton administration and the early Bush administration. With its ideological allies, ExxonMobil funded the promotion of public confusion about climate science by means that future employees and executives of the corporation are likely to look back on with regret. The climate risks future generations will inherit will pass to them from many authors, of course, and hardly just from ExxonMobil. Even if ExxonMobil began immediately to invest all of its lobbying and public policy expenditures to help enact an aggressive carbon price in the United States, the West's ability to persuade China, India, and other poor industrializing countries to adopt and enforce adequate emission reductions would still appear doubtful. Early in 2011, the research group Climate Central, working from BP forecasts about future energy demand, calculated that stabilizing carbon dioxide concentrations by 2050 at 500 parts per million, about a quarter higher than current levels, would require reducing average emissions per unit of energy used in the world by 4.2% per year. The analysts noted, "The highest previously recorded rate of decarbonization in a country probably took place in France between 1975 and 1990, when that country's nuclear power system expanded very rapidly. And yet, even in that extreme instance, France's emissions fell by only 2.6% annually." The numbers argue that global warming on a scale scientists describe today as dangerous will occur. On July 1, 2011, ExxonMobil's Silvertip pipeline, running from Wyoming to the corporation's refinery in Billings, Montana, sprang a leak and poured about 1,000 barrels of oil into the majestic Yellowstone River. The corporation estimated that cleanup and payments for damaged property would cost $42.6 million. "We deeply regret this incident has happened," corporate spokesman Kevin Alexon said. On the same day, Baltimore County jurors deliberating in the second of two civil lawsuits filed over the massive leak of gasoline from the former Jacksonville, Maryland Exxon station, the case filed by Peter Angelis, Stephen Snyder's arch-rival in the Baltimore plaintiff's bar, returned a verdict of actual and punitive damages of $1.5 billion, 10 times greater than the award Snyder had won for his clients. ExxonMobil vowed to appeal. The corporation continued to appeal Snyder's award of damages, too. A week later, on July 8th, the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia reinstated the lawsuit filed by villagers in Aceh, Indonesia, who alleged that ExxonMobil bore responsibility for torture and killings they had suffered at the hands of Indonesian soldiers guarding the corporation's gas fields. ExxonMobil's lawyers had challenged the case at every turn. The lawsuit had now been pending without trial or settlement for more than a decade. The corporation again filed an appeal. A month later, ExxonMobil announced that it was placing its interests in Aceh's gas fields and liquefied natural gas operations up for sale. A spokesman said the sale had nothing to do with the Aceh lawsuit, but was the result of routine reviews of worldwide holdings.